Great. Okay. Let's see if I can do any better with this than anyone else can. Probably not. So thanks very much for the invitation to speak, and the invitation to speak last, which is So all of this is joint with Matthew Emerton. And I think the long title is probably identical to the title of our paper, which is on the archive and on my website as of today. It's on your website as well? Okay. I was going to say it wasn't on Matt's website, but it is. So you can look at that. It has a nice introduction. And the rest of the paper is nice as well, but the introduction I recommend reading because I think it sets out everything. I mean, it sets out what I'm going to say here, but I think it sets everything out without getting into some of the kind of unpleasant details that are found later, which I'm going to mostly avoid today as well. So I guess this talk is somewhat related to Kaiwen's talk, as he alluded to as well. It's about the torsion in the cohomology of Shimura varieties. And there are several reasons why one might be interested in this. I mean, it's an interesting question in its own right. The thing that motivated us to think about this was the notion of some kind of p-adic automorphic form. So there are many kind of definitions you could give of these things, and I think it's fair to say that we don't have a kind of framework in anything like its final form at the moment. One thing you can do, for example, is on groups which are compact, you can just kind of very naturally interpolate your coefficient systems, take cohomology with kind of a coefficient system that's interpolating, and that gives you some nice definition. In other cases, it's rather harder to see what one should do on GLN, for example. And I think for me at least, the most promising definition at the moment is the theory of p-adically completed cohomology. Which is due to, the original ideas are due to Matt, and also Frank Caligari. So there's a paper of Caligari and Emerson that sets out some general conjectural framework for working with computed cohomology and using it as some kind of p-adic automorphic forms in general. Now, if you want to do this, if you want to use this definition, you then have to try and prove something about it. And what this is taking cohomology with kind of mod p coefficients, mod p squared coefficients, and so on, and taking some big limit. So it's not like you're starting with integral cohomology and just completing it. It's really important to actually start with the torsion cohomology and build it up. And in general, you can really see examples. For example, if you think about GL2 over an imaginary quadratic field, which I certainly won't be thinking about in the rest of this talk, but if you look at that example, you can see that the torsion is really building up in a significant way and is going to be very important. So there seems to be some kind of dichotomy, at least conjecturally, between situations where you have Shimura varieties and the kind of things we've been talking about this week and I'll continue to talk about after this little introduction, and the cases where there are no Shimura varieties. So, of course, there's a dichotomy just by definition, but it really seems to be the important one from this perspective. So another way to put it would be groups which admit discrete series and groups which don't admit discrete series. So in the Shimura variety cases, there seems to be not so much torsion. Whereas, as I already mentioned, in this case, when there aren't Shimura varieties, there seems to be a lot of torsion. And I guess, again, in this case, maybe though, have examples going back to Richard Taylor's thesis where you can really see the torsion and work with Heder as well. So this is what I want to focus on today. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the point is going to be that it's the groups where the cohomology is really concentrated in one degree, the tempered cohomology. So yes, the discrete series. But from this more geometric perspective, I'm choosing to just kind of weakly class it in this way. So even though there isn't so much torsion in these cases, it's still an interesting and useful question to actually say what you can about it, because it will make these constructions are still important in some variety cases. I may say something at the end about an application of all this, but just kind of expecting there to be not much torsion is not much use if you're actually trying to make an argument. And what do we mean by not much torsion? Well, as we saw in Kaiwan's talk, there's this work of Lan and Sirth that shows that in the kind of good reduction, low weight, low regular weight, okay, the cohomology was concentrated in middle degree. There was a vanishing theorem outside of middle degree. So this exactly mirrors what happens in characteristic zero. So in characteristic zero, it's not the case that the cohomology completely vanishes outside of the middle degree, but for example, the part of the cohomology corresponding to irreducible Gauss representations of the dimension you're looking for, the things corresponding to the cuspid automorphic forms, is concentrated in the middle dimension. So the talk we saw this morning was some evidence that this phenomenon is going to persist in characteristic P. So I want to say more about this problem. Now, as Kaiwan said, there are various conditions in this theorem. One was that the weight was regular, and he remarked that if you relax this condition, the theorem would actually become false. So in fact, if you took constant coefficients, you could find plenty of classes even in H0, which were contributing to the cohomology. And what's going on there, we can kind of see perhaps an example in just thinking about the modular curve case. So if I just take a modular curve, so let's take n at least 5, and let's write x is x1 of n. And now I can consider these spaces hi of x. I guess there's a Q bar. So let's think about these spaces. Then it's not true that the H0 vanishes. But what we do know is that the H0 is not so very interesting from an arithmetic point of view. It's Eisenstein. So what does that mean? And there's several ways of expressing this. The Gower axion here is actually abelian. But I'd like to express it in terms of the action of the Hecker operators. So there's a natural T is going to be the Hecker algebra that acts on here. So I'm just thinking about the Hecker operators at the good primes, not dividing NP. So this axon here, we'll go axon all degrees, and if M is a maximal ideal of this with residue field FP bar, then this localization, if I localize this modular M, and this is zero unless M is Eisenstein. So Eisenstein means what you think it does. It means that the the system of eigenvalues congruent to something coming from an Eisenstein series. That would be one way of putting it. So, similarly, the H2 vanishes if M is non-Eisenstein. And from that, it's easy to see that if I take the integral cohomology, this is torsion-free. Again, I guess the argument for this was in Cohen's talk. You just look at the long exact sequence for reduction mod p on the coefficient. Yes, sorry. This is true, and this will be important much later on. No, this is rather obvious in this case. This is the kind of behavior that one might hope would persist in greater generality, where it won't be the case that the cohomology is automatically torsion-free. So this is not so hard to prove at all, because essentially the point is that the H0 of a Shimura variety, you can really just concretely compute the Galois action, the Hecker action, and in this case, it being just a curve, you've only got the H2 is going to vanish as well from Poincaré duality, and then H1 is all that's left. But this is kind of the phenomenon we'd like to generalize. So it's not a vanishing result in complete generality, because this thing really isn't zero. But when you localize it at these non-Eisenstein ideals, you get a vanishing result. And the non-Eisenstein ideals are the ones that are the most interesting from the point of view of studying modular forms and so on, I think it's reasonable to say. So this kind of result is used all over the place in the theory of modular forms, theory of R equals T terms and so on. It's a very basic tool. Basically, once you've got this vanishing, you know that when you localize it a non-Eisenstein ideal, the H1 is exact, and you can just manipulate it in a very hands-on fashion. So this is what we want to generalize. So I should perhaps make a couple of remarks before I try and generalize it. One was that I could replace this constant coefficients here with some non-constant coefficients, and the same argument and the same conclusion would apply. And the other one was that, in contrast to what we saw this morning, I also don't need to worry about the power of p dividing n. It still remains true. On the other hand, the argument here is manifestly not suited to working in high dimension, because, as I say, it just crucially used the fact that for H0 we have a very concrete description. Okay, so let me see if I can maybe fit the main theorem that I want to discuss over here in a moment, and then I can leave it up and I can draw on the various assumptions as we go along. But perhaps let me see how long the theorem is going to be. So let me just sort of set up a couple of pieces of notation over here, which will eventually disappear, but hopefully fairly straightforward. So here's what we're going to prove. So I now want to take X to be a GU n minus 1, 1 Shimura variety. For some n, and that's going to be the reflex field here. This is the kind of simplest case. I'm going to take E to be an imaginary quadratic field. And in fact, I'm going to assume that this is coming from a division algebra. I don't really need, but I will just give it some name. So this is kind of the simplest possible case here. I think it's fair to say that the theorem would generalize to working over CM fields, and one could probably these days remove this assumption, but I think I'm going to feel safer keeping that in place. So this is the kind of Shimura varieties that Harrison Taylor might be considering, for example. Have I done the bad thing of writing on the backboard? I have. So let me move over here. So these are the kind of Shimura varieties we're going to consider, which I think we've seen quite a lot of this week. And again, I think our method should extend to prove things from rather more general PEL Shimura varieties, but we haven't done that yet. You'll see what the ideas are and how they might adapt as we go along. So I want to take P a prime. I want it to be split in E. So the unitary group is just GLN there, or GLN cross GL1. Let's write that down. So the GU N minus 1, 1 at P. I'm just going to have an isomorphism of that with GLN QP. Times, and I'm going to basically kind of forget about the distinction between this and GLN from now on. T is going to be my Hecker algebra, and I'm just going to have the Hecker operators at the good places, so the places that are split and ramified as good as you could hope. So the Hecker operators at the good split primes. The prime splitting in E. So by Chebotarov density and things, this Hecker algebra is kind of large enough to determine Galois actions, for example. So I'm not throwing too much away. And let's have M a maximal ideal of T. So this is the same kind of framework I had for the modular curve case. And now let's have a theorem. Which I'm going to erase Matt for now. So hopefully the theorem will fit over here. So the idea is that I want to prove a theorem that has its kind of eventual conclusion that lots of these localizations are vanishing. But I'm going to need rather more conditions than the kind of what one would imagine would be the optimum set. So let's assume the following. Firstly, I need to assume there's a Galois representation associated to M. So there exists a representation of, this is again, mod P Galois representation attached to M in the usual way. So in other words, the characteristic polynomials of Frobenii at good places are going to be given by the eigenvalues of those Hecker operators. So this is, in this generality, this is a fairly serious assumption, except for the fact that, as I said, like maybe one of our main goals is to be able to actually to work kind of efficiently with the cohomology in middle degree and know that it's torsion-free, in which case everything will actually be coming from characteristic zero. And in characteristic zero, this is now, you know, a very reasonable assumption because we have this construction of Galois representations associated to the automorphic forms in question. So, for example, this will be fine if M is actually just coming from taking the Hecker eigenvalues of some automorphic form and reducing mod P. So that's one assumption. Now I need some assumptions on this representation, and thus on M. So secondly, I want to assume that the image of this Galois representation is not too small. So I'm going to kind of make the kind of biggest image assumption I could. So I'm going to assume that basically this is a full GLN for some subfield. So I'm going to assume there's a subfield of FP bar, necessarily finite, so that the image of this representation is kind of squeezed between SLN and GLN. So it's like this. And maybe I won't worry about the center. That's the next assumption. Thirdly, is an assumption that I won't be able to, I won't explain for a moment, but I'll come back to. So this is an assumption locally at P. I'm going to assume this is N minus 1 over 2 regular. So this is some kind of genericity assumption. It's somewhat akin to the kind of condition that Kaiwine had about being far away from some walls, but I should say it's more restrictive than anything he was assuming. I will make that one precise in a minute. Fourthly, I need to assume that P is not too small. I think N choose 2 plus 1 is is enough. And fifthly, I want to assume one more condition about this local representation at P. I want to assume that the semi-simplification of this, this representation is not just a sum of characters. Is not a sum of n one-dimensional characters. So I'll make another remark about this in a moment. Well, then the theorem is, it's some vanishing result. So perhaps I'm expressing it in characteristic zero. So these localizations of the integral thing vanish if I is at most, I guess, n minus 1 over 2, and is torsion free in the next degree. And that's what I want to say. Yeah. Okay, so note the middle degree here would be n minus 1, so I'm not really going as far as I would like to. I'm kind of going half as far up as I would like to with some vanishing results. And of course, by Poincaré duality, I get some vanishing results at the top end as well. Yes. Sorry, so this should probably be... someone can tell me whether I'm putting a floor or a ceiling in, perhaps. Yeah, cool. Sorry, I can't be floors or ceilings at the... at the board. Okay, great, thanks. That's a good point. Didn't make much sense before. So the point is you have a vanishing result up to here, and then the next degree up is necessarily torsion-free, as follows just from some easy arguments along exact sequences. So what can I say about these assumptions? I think it's fair to say the fourth assumption is pretty mild. The third assumption I'll tell you all about in a second. This fifth assumption here is not so serious. You can certainly weaken this quite a bit. For example, if I don't assume this at all, I would still get this. I would just have to go to one degree lower, but I think you can also assume something quite a lot weaker, even if it is a sum of one-dimensional characters. I don't think it's so serious. The more serious assumptions, I think, are probably one and three are really where the serious assumptions are. Again, two, I can't weaken completely, but you can certainly weaken quite considerably. So, what I wanted to say. I mean, it's conjugate self-dual, so I don't think this is such an issue. But in any case, if you're concerned, I can certainly just replace it with any other, as long as I make some reasonable assumption on P versus N, I could replace it with any other, what am I trying to say, algebraic group, for example. So that would be one way in which I could weaken it. I'll come to that in a little bit about where that assumption's coming in. That's certainly not in any way the more serious thing. What did I want to say? I wanted to say that if n equals 3, this is somehow the best case, because in this case, the numerics work out rather better, and you get that that the HI, the cohomology, to dp bar, this cohomology is zero if I is not 2. And if I equals 2, it's torsion free. So the corollary of that is that you can kind of, at least morally, you can argue on U21 in the same way that you would for modular curves. And for example, in the paper, we we have an application to the weight part of Sayre's conjecture for these groups. It uses this. Okay. Right. So, let me now try and tell you how we prove this and where these conditions come from, and give you some indication of how one might go with this kind of thing in general. So the way I'm going to do that is by reproving this result about modular curves, but with assumptions that look more like this. So some kind of putting on unnecessarily strong assumptions, but giving a proof that will actually generalize. So let me just define this notion of regular, of n minus 1 over 2 regular. So when I restrict my representation to the decomposition group at P, I now just have some, maybe R is going to be a local representation like this. And these representations are very simple, as you probably all know, because at least up to semi-simplification, the extensions can be a little mysterious, but those aren't going to bother me at all. So if let's assume this is irreducible, well then, it's not at all hard to show that R is actually just induced from an unramified extension of degree n. So maybe qp to the n can be my notation for the unramified extension of degree n, and it's going to be the induction of some character chi. And then chi on inertia so of course this is unramified, so this is the inertia group at P is the same for these two things. This is just going to be a power of a fundamental character of nivo n. So I can write this as omega n to the a0 plus a1p plus an minus 1 p to the n minus 1. And maybe I'll choose my ai to be in 0 p minus 1. And so what do I want to say? So then the kind of definition is the inertial weight of R bar, or R, sorry, are the set, the multiset of the AI. So I think these things were probably first defined by Sayre, perhaps. I'll come to a conjecture in a minute that he made about them. So these are the inertial weights of an irreducible representation, and you extend the definition to a general representation by just semi-simplifying and then taking the union of the multisets for the irreducible parts. So for example, if I just have kind of omega I, omega j, omega k, if it was just a sum of characters, the inertial weights are I, j, and k, provided these are reducible p minus 1. So this is some standard thing. So given that, I can define what this regularity condition is. So I say that the R, which I may now consider to be either reducible or irreducible, I'll say that it's J regular if all the inertial weights are sufficiently spread out. So they differ by at least, I think I want j plus 1. So what do I mean by that? I mean, I'm going to consider these numbers all mod p, and then I'm going to consider like all these numbers plus 1, all these numbers plus 2, up plus j, and I want all of those numbers to be different. So I'm just going to take this set of numbers and just demand that the gaps between them are at least as big as j. So that's the condition I'm using here. So again, this is, as I was saying, you can kind of view this as being some condition that says that I'm not too close to the walls of something. I mean, there's a kind of relationship in, I guess, to make the relationship to Kaiwan's talk more precise, if you think about the weight part of Sayre's conjecture, you know stuff about that, then there's a relationship between the inertial part of the Galois representation and some weight, and then this really is some condition about about not being too close to the boundaries of some bulge chamber. Okay, so I think I've now stated the theorem. So let's now imagine I'm going to try and prove the modular curve analog. So what I want to use is synthetic Hodge theory. That's going to be the main tool, as you might have guessed from the title of the talk. But let's not use that board for a moment. So the idea is to use synthetic Hodge theory. So what am I going to do? What I need to do is I need to say something about the cohomology in degree I, and I need to relate it to my conditions, and here I'm going to have to use this condition. I've made a fuss of setting this up. So I want to somehow relate the fact that the Gal representation occurs in some cohomology of degree I to some property of the restriction of the decomposition group at P. So here's the kind of thing that I want to use. Here's maybe like the motivating result. There's a conjecture of Serre from the sometime in the 1970s, I don't remember quite when, I'm sure someone can tell me, which was proved eventually by Xavier Caruso about 10 years ago. So it says, let's take K to be any finite extension of QP, and X any proper semi-stable variety over K, let me just K variety, I'll say. Then the inertial weights of the kind of the ith Mathilde cohomology with constant coefficients, FP bar, I'll take the dual to put everything in the kind of correct degree, these are contained in a certain range, the range 0 up to the degree I of the cohomology times EK, the absolute ramification index of the field K. So this is some result that relates the degree of the cohomology in which you're occurring to some fact about the local Gal representation. So let's see how that would help us if we want to prove something about modular curves. Sorry? Yes. I won't swap balls around to like that. That's exactly what I mean. So you could think good reduction, for example, if you like. Okay, so I should say that, you could think of this result as being some kind of... Sorry, is there a question? Okay, so you could think of this as being kind of a generalization of Reynaud's result about, Reynaud proved a result like this for finite exact group schemes. Okay, so... Right, so here's an example. So let's take K equals QP, and let's take X to be X1 of N, with maybe P not dividing N. So I have good reduction. Well then, if the kind of, if some power of the cyclic atomic character occurs in the H0 of this considered just as representation of the absolute Gal group of QP, then J equals 0. And that follows just, I could put the dual in, but it doesn't really matter here, because the weight is just going to be 0. So how does that help me to do anything? Well, that means that I can now say something about the Gal representations that can show up in here, the two-dimensional Gal representations, just by kind of looking at their constituents. So let's take F, a modular form, or a custodial eigenform, of weight between weight k between 2 and t minus 1, level gamma 1 of n, and again keeping this assumption that t doesn't divide n, and let's assume that the reduction mod p of the Galois representation associated to f is irreducible. And let's have f correspond to a maximal ideal m of the Hecker algebra. And then what do we find? We find that rho f bar, even just the restriction for decomposition group, can't appear in the H0, and if k is not 2, then I can actually get the same thing with the H1. And the proof is simple. The proof is, I mean, let's just consider for a second the case where the representation is reducible. Then we know that the local representation is reducible. We know it's kind of 1 plus cyclotomic to the k minus 1. And now we're in trouble because we said that it had to be actually just 1 here. So the cyclotomic to the k minus 1 is not going to show up. And similarly here, I'm only allowed to kind of have 1 plus omega. Maybe I have to worry about whether I should have put a joule here or not, but I'm not going to worry about that now. And again, if k is bigger than 2, then I have an omega to the k minus 1, which can't have actually been there. And exactly the same argument works in the case where the restriction to this is irreducible, and it's just an induction of a Nevo 2 thing. Yes, having written this, I could then say that this localization at m is 0, and similarly here with the H1. That was the point introduced in the end. So this is the argument that we want to generalize. I've got 20 minutes left to tell you how it's going to go. So you can see exactly where we're going to, or at least you can start to see where we're going to start using assumptions here. This regularity assumption, it's clearly necessary to have something like this because, I mean, it's not. I mean, if I chose, for example, k to be p here, if the reduction of this could contain the trivial characters, then I wouldn't be able to include anything. I mean, I'm trying to go from some representation locally at p to some global information, so I really have to have some assumption at p. I mean, this assumption at p is supposed to somehow replace some kind of Eisenstein assumption. We haven't really seen the first assumption in full force yet. Sorry, the second assumption in full force yet, but we will do. And the first assumption was kind of key to the whole thing, because to conclude that this localization at m was 0, I looked exactly at the related Galois representation. So it's really quite crucial I have a Galois representation at hand in order to say anything at all. Okay, so what do I want to do? What do I need to do if I want to generalize? I want to just beef this up from modular curves to Shimura varieties. Well, I have to do several things. So, what are the problems? Let me see what I've identified as the problems. There are several. Well, maybe problem one was that this method requires me to be have semi-stable reduction. So we need X semi-stable, and that and that kind of implies in the modular curve case that you have to have some bound on the power of p dividing n. So the level can't be too bad. Okay, well, what's the fix to this? The fix to this isn't so bad either. So, first of all, you reduce to I guess, to Proti Iwahori level. So here, I'm just thinking of kind of like maybe gamma 1 of P. I'll say something in a moment about how one might do that. And then once one's got that, one again has bad reduction, but you have potentially semi-stable reduction at least. So what you can do is you've at least bounded the kind of degree of the field extension you might have to take to get good reduction. And then what you do is you have semi-stable reduction over, in this case, with my assumptions, just QP D to P. And so the idea is that you kind of apply the kind of periodic Hodge theory, which has got in to that, and which I'll discuss more in a minute, Hodge theory over QP Z to P. Well, on its own, that wouldn't be so good, because it turns out, I mean, you can kind of imagine, if I'm trying to apply this argument here after going up to QP Z to P, I'm in trouble because all my omega to the j's have just become the trivial character. I've just trivialized the multi-cyclic atomic character. But what you do is you keep track of descent data. So when I restrict everything to going up to QP D to P, if I just did that and then forgot that I came from QP in the first place, I would be in trouble. But in fact, it's not so hard to keep track of some descent data and still recover non-trivial information in this situation. You can see this kind of argument again just in the theory of modular forms. People often kind of, maybe a classic example would be Gross's paper on the Taylor's criterion, where you can see him working very effectively instead of working with kind of weight K modular forms, he works with weight 2 modular forms over some extension. But that's not so hard. This reduction here, well, again, kind of morally, you can see that this might be reasonable from thinking about modular forms. It's the fact that weight K modular forms of arbitrary level are kind of congruent just to weight 2 modular forms. Of level gamma 1 P, at least up to some twist. So that's kind of the moral argument. That's obviously not an argument that we can just apply in this kind of situation where I'm working just purely in characteristic peer of modular forms around. But the way one can work is if you've proved that the cohomology vanishes at this pro-P or Hori level, then if you take some any other level, any smaller level, you can look at the action of the pro-P or Hori group on the cohomology of that smaller level, and now you've got a pro-P group acting on some vector space of over a field of characteristic P. So if that vector space is non-zero, so would be the invariance. And you would find that you actually still had cohomology even in the pro-P or Hori level. So, of course, again, you have to be a little bit careful with that argument. You're really using Hochschild's there in some way, but you prove this theorem by induction on the degree and everything works out nicely. So none of this is too bad. The real problem, and when you kind of try and run through an argument like this, you'll kind of find that you start getting regularity conditions of the kind that I've mentioned up there. The real problems are actually elsewhere. So maybe problem 2. I won't say much about, but it's where the first condition comes in. It's to kind of relate HI of M being non-zero to rho M kind of living inside HI M. So, living inside HI. So, this is kind of, I kind of basically skipped over this step here. I said that this Gal representation can't appear in here precisely when, you know, if this localization is vanishing. Now, how do you actually conclude something like that? Well, the only information you really have at hand about the Hecker operators is the Aikio-Shimura relation in general. And for GL2, that's fine. You know that the Aikio-Shimura relation, you know, determines the Gal representation. Whereas in general, if I just tell you I have I have some part up here, some kind of Gal representation that's annihilated by the Aikido-Shimura relations. It's not at all obvious that that Gal representation is really the one I was looking for in the first place. So the kind of the problem is, I want to prove a theorem. You want to know something like, if you've got two irreducible representations of some group, let's say GLN, and I've got some representation theta, GLM maybe, and let's assume these are both irreducible. And this is just some finite group, but it would be the Galois group for me. So if I assume that for all elements G, that the characteristic polynomial of rho of G annihilates theta of G, the kind of information I might have coming from some Aikido-Shimura relations, I would like to know that this implied that rho was actually isomorphic to theta. Okay. Sorry? Yeah, irreducible. So this is the kind of thing, and again, this is the kind of argument that gets used all over the place if you're using it in modular form. So the case n equals 1 here is not so hard. This is some kind of property of rho that I want to have, that this would hold for all thetas. N equals 2, Mazur proved in the Eisenstein ideal paper, and again, it gets used in quite a few places. But already for n equals 3, this is false in general. It's not very hard to come up with. I mean, I think even just A4 in the standard three-dimensional representation, you already find that this is failing quite badly. So I don't know if the problem of for which representations exactly this property holds has been studied in general, but it's certainly true, for example, under the condition, the second condition I have written up there, which is where that condition comes in. And as I said, again, you can kind of see it holds in lots of other cases and kind of for induced representations or in general for representations whose image is lying in some kind of large enough algebraic group. But that's where that kind of assumption comes from. And I think this is kind of, if you're in some way going to try and use properties of Gal representations to prove results about vanishing when you localize at Hecker eigensystems, at maximum ideals of Hecker algebras, you really have to take account of this phenomenon. So that's not the serious problem either. The really serious problem is just actually something that's buried in Caruso's theorem up here, which is that there's an additional assumption in his theorem, in some sense, that I didn't mention. So the problem 3 is kind of is applying Caruso's theorem. So what I said earlier wasn't literally true. I said what I would do is I was going to start over QP and I was going to go up to QP beta P and kind of apply this kind of machinery and then come back down again using some descent data. Now, really that doesn't work so well because when I go up to QP beta P, my E has become P minus 1 and I haven't got any information at all here. I mean, the theorem is true, but I've said that the numbers are between 0 and P minus 1, which were by definition between 0 and P minus 1. So that's not so good. So what you might imagine is that you want some kind of version of his theorem that takes into account descent data, and you can certainly look at what he's proved and say, well, here's a theorem I would like to have that would incorporate that. So the kind of problem is that that his theorem, so Caruso's theorem, is really a corollary of something else that he's proved. It's kind of a corollary of a mod P comparison theorem, which, as Cohen remarked this morning, are rather deep and difficult theorems. So it's computing the Tal cohomology in terms of some log crystalline cohomology, and then there's the computation integral periodic Hodge theory, and so on. And absolutely embedded in his result is the assumption that, and it's kind of key to his method, this requires that I times the ramification degree is less than P minus 1. Now, that's not a problem in his application, because since this is at least P minus 1, this theorem is vacuous, so he doesn't have an issue. But if we want to apply it in our context and keep a chance of some descent data and so on, we're in real trouble, because for us, E is going to be equal to P minus 1, and we certainly want I to be bigger than 0. So the natural one natural thing you might try and do is just prove a comparison theorem without any restrictions at all on the ramification degree or the degree of the cohomology and so on. As far as I can tell from talking to experts, that seems to be rather hard. I don't think people know how to do this. And certainly the people I asked about this more recently said that this seemed like a hard problem. So fortunately, what you can do is you can actually get by with something much weaker, or a priori much weaker, when you just look at the statement. But in practice, turns out to be enough to make all the kind of arguments I want to make work. So let me tell you what that is. That's kind of our main result in theoretic Hodge theory. Maybe I will give it a board of its own. So this result, as I say, is on the face of it rather weaker than having some kind of comparison theorem. But in practice, firstly for the kind of result we want to prove here, but secondly, I think for a lot of other results that one might want to prove, this is enough. So we kind of make them, I think it's probably reasonable to say that the result I'm about to state is enough to push through most of the arguments that people have used to apply integral periodic Hodge theory to kind of mod P representations associated with modular forms, so things about the weight part of Serre's conjecture and so on. So this theorem is kind of designed to, with those applications in mind, theorem of math for myself. So let me take similar assumptions to Caruso's theorem. So K over QP is finite. X over K smooth. And now I'm going to also assume it's projective. Not so serious for things like applications to Schirmer varieties. With semi-stable over OK. Now let rho be an irreducible subquotient of the following GK representations, so just the cohomology K in degree I considered just as a representation of GK with constant mod P coefficients. Well then, so what I'd like to say is that I can in some way compare this to some log crystalline cohomology or something like that. That's, as I say, seems very hard. What we can do instead is say that rho is also, it's an irreducible thing in here, it also lives somewhere kind of easier to get a handle on, so it's an irreducible subquotient of the reduction mod P I thought I'll just say reduction mod P to save myself some time, but clearly that was a vain hope. Maximally ideal in VP bar of a potentially semi-stable, sorry, even a semi-stable representation, semi-stable GK representation with Hodge tape weights. I think we take the kind of traditional normalization where the atomic character is Hodge tape weight minus one. So this is, these Hodge tape weights are going to be where you'd hope they were. They're between minus I and zero. So how is this related to some kind of comparison theorem? Well, if everything in question lifted to characteristic zero, so if in fact I could just, if this thing here was just a reduction mod the maximal ideal of the same thing with VP bar coefficients, then the traditional comparison theorems of, you know, culminating in the work of Tsuji would tell me that this representation with VP bar here was exactly some kind of representation semi-stable with Hodge tape weights in this range. And you can then apply the kind of integral periodic Hodge theory, the kind of explicit things with Breuer modules and so on, exactly as in Caruso's work, and conclude in the same way. So, of course, the problem is that, you know, I'm trying to actually prove some kind of torsion freeness result for some cohomology. I don't know at all that these classes aren't just torsion and don't lift. Or I'd be done. So what are the ideas? Well, the idea, kind of the first idea, the naive idea is what I just explained, is that if the cohomology leafy bar is torsion free, then we're done. Yeah, sorry, thanks. So if both of these were torsion free, if everything was nice, then we'd be fine. If that was literally the reduction mod P of this, then we win. Now, unfortunately, that probably isn't true. That certainly isn't true in general. So that's kind of like the idea part one. The idea part two is, well, let's just consider the case I equals one. So I equals one, if X is a curve, then we're fine. So if dimension of X is one, then we're fine because the cohomology of a curve certainly doesn't have any torsion. We understand the cohomology of a curve very well. And then the idea, let's just keep with cohomology in degree one. Ah, this is that board. Great. Is that we can use induction on the dimension of X. Let me explain in 2 minutes how that might go. Well, probably several of you are ahead of me at this point. So the idea is you just use the weak left set theorem. So you take a hyperplane section, X, and then, so I'm going to assume the dimension is greater than 1, and then the cohomology of X is just going to embed in the cohomology of Y. And with a little bit of work, you can choose, which is not due to us, you can choose Y to also have semi-stable reductions on. These are theorems of Janssen and Saito, and I guess in order to not make any kind of unknown basions or anything, you also need some work of Bjorn Poonen on weak left sets over finite fields. And now I just kind of carry on by induction, and eventually I'm in some curve. And now this lifts. So my representation lives in here, and I go all the way across some curve, and it lifts up to characteristic zero. So that's great. Now, if I is greater than one, that doesn't work in the same way, but you can still make a similar argument using two hyperplane sections, and you have to look at the cohomology of the pair. So I take two hyperplane sections Y and Z, and again I have to arrange that they have, these hyperplane sections have semi-stable reduction, and in fact so does their intersection, that everything is as transverse as possible. And it turns out that you can again prove with weak left sets that these things just have cohomology concentrated in middle degree, so they work as well as kind of a building block as these things do for the case I equals one. So you chase everything through and you obtain this result. So I should say this result on its own isn't quite good enough to prove this. First of all, I need to, at the moment this is just irreducible representations of the local Galois group, I really need to have the global Galois group at hand, which is not so hard. And secondly, I need some version which keeps track of descent data, which is rather more painful to prove, but can be proved in the same kind of way. So let me stop there.